It's day 8 of the government shutdown, and pundits and politicians are starting to look ahead to the next big fiscal battle, the debt ceiling.
Treasury Secretary Jack Lew says the United States is going to run out of borrowed money on October 17th. Well, from time to time, we call up Chris Farrell, economics editor for Marketplace Money, to help us figure out what these things mean for us and for the economy. Chris, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'll try.
You'll try. So what, give us the debt ceiling 101. What happens on October 17th-ish?
Well, what happens at that point is the government, unless it can borrow more money, isn't going to be able to pay some of its bills, right? Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, there's a lot of uncertainty about that statement because, well, it could prioritize, with the jargon term that's out there is prioritize. It could go ahead and pay Social Security. It could pay Medicare bills. It would pay its veterans bills, but it may not pay some other bills. So technically, they could maybe avoid default by making some payments a priority and other payments not, so they keep making those interest payments. But here's the thing. You don't want to get to that world. There's nothing good to be said that if the Treasury faces that risk of default, that somehow it can avoid it and that's a good thing? No, the Treasury shouldn't even come close to dealing with the risk of default.
Well, the tricky thing about talking about what would happen in a case of default is a lack of precedent. We have not seen anything like this happening in recent American history.
No, that's right. And but this is there's a couple reasons why, you know, I'm in the camp, or I believe, and I think most people are in this camp, frankly, this is a disaster. You know, if you think about every pension fund in the United States, it's built on a foundation of U.S. Treasuries. Wall Street is built on a foundation of U.S. Treasuries. Every finance textbook, mutual fund pamphlet, personal finance book describes U.S. Treasuries as your riskless security. Right, we all know stocks are volatile, right? And companies can go bankrupt, and corporations can go bankrupt, and their debt can go bad. But you build your foundation for your long-term savings on this riskless security called U.S. Treasuries. And once you default, it's no longer a riskless security. And that's what has everyone really scared. This riskless security is what the financial system is built upon.
Well, President Obama spoke earlier today. We aired that here on the Ideas Network. Let's give a listen to him talking a little bit about the consequences of not raising that debt ceiling.
Now, the last time that the Tea Party Republicans flirted with the idea of default 2 years ago, markets plunged, business and consumer confidence plunged, America's credit rating was downgraded for the first time. And a decision to actually go through with it, to actually permit default, according to many CEOs and economists, would be, and I'm quoting here, insane, catastrophic, chaos. These are some of the more polite words. Warren Buffett likened default to a nuclear bomb, a weapon too horrible to use. It would disrupt markets. It would undermine the world's confidence in America as the bedrock of the global economy. And it might permanently increase our borrowing costs.
All right, let's unpack some of that, Chris. So first of all, we're at the point where we were earlier, where we're near the cliff. Are we seeing issues with consumer confidence that President Obama was talking about in the previous near miss?
I think we are seeing modest signs of consumer confidence. The previous near miss was in the that was the summer of 2011, August of 2011. And we were at that period of time, if you remember, where the economy was growing, and we've been growing at this 2% average annual rate. And it appeared like the economy was gathering some momentum. And then you had the debt limit crisis and the near default. And that definitely had an impact in terms of, you know, hesitation on hiring, hesitation on capital equipment expansions, and an impact on consumer confidence and on Wall Street confidence. So we continued to expand at this 2% rate, but we didn't get up to that higher rate of growth that we really want. Now we're here. And the one difference between 2011 and now is that the threat of default is being taken more seriously. When I would call mainstream economists, you know, at the University of Wisconsin, Madison, or University of Minnesota, you know, and I'd say, this is back in 2011, I said, you know, they're threatening default. Chris, why are you even reporting on this? Why are you even talking about this? This is just histrionics. We got so close. Now you call these exact same people up, and you say, what about the risk of default? And there's this long pause. Then there's a deep sigh. We haven't got any words out yet. And then they say, well, I hope it doesn't happen. It would be, just as Obama's saying, catastrophic, whatever term that they want to use. So we're taking it more seriously. And so part of the damage that's happening right now is who isn't being hired because of the uncertainty? What capital project isn't being funded because of the uncertainty? And I think it's weighing on an economy that, you know, the labor market has been improving, the housing market has been improving, the infamous headwinds are no longer as bad as they were. And so, you know, again, an economy that's trying to go from a 2% to a 3%, and then you have this.
Well, and part of the weirdness, though, is, are those companies hiring? Are they making investments? We don't know, right? Because of the federal shutdown, the parts of the government that measure that stuff aren't, like, we're supposed to get that big jobs report on Friday. No, right?
Right. So here we're talking about this, that if we were having this conversation, what, just 2 weeks ago, probably 2 weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, we'd be talking about the Fed and tapering. And this is all about the Federal Reserve has done this quantitative easing. And there's this enormous concern about, as the Fed sort of, you know, starts reducing that quantitative easing, it's called the tapering. And the whole discussion was about the job market. And on Friday, we're not going to get the job figures. And we don't get – there's a lot of Department of Agriculture figures that aren't coming out. And so people are trying to tap into some private databases and trying to figure out what's going on. But the longer this goes on, the more business, the Federal Reserve, and the global economy is starting to fly a little bit blind.
We'll talk more about the impact of what happens if we do – hit that debt ceiling crunch, if we don't raise the limit, and what happens to us and maybe mortgages and other loans we take. We're talking to Chris Farrell, economics editor for Marketplace Money.
Coming up at the end of the hour, we'd like to hear from you on the politics of the debt ceiling. Do you think the United States should raise the debt ceiling? Why or why not? And what do you think about the politics involved in all of this? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or go ahead and post on the Central Time Facebook page.
More talk about the debt ceiling and what it means coming up. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. We're talking to Chris Farrell, economics editor for Marketplace Money, about the debt ceiling crisis, the impending date, October 17th, when we no longer can borrow to pay our bills.
Coming up in a few minutes, we're asking you to weigh in on the politics of the debt ceiling. Do you think the United States should go ahead and raise the debt ceiling? Why or why not? And are you worried about how the U.S. might be perceived internationally? And who would you blame? Who do you blame about the debt ceiling crisis? Our number, 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can also post your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page.
All right, Chris. In that speech earlier, President Obama said one of the consequences of a failure to reach a deal on the debt ceiling will affect consumers. It'll make it harder to get mortgage loans, or higher rates on loans like that could be the outcome. Why would that be?
Well, because if you think of a classic 30-year fixed rate mortgage, right, that's sort of the mainstay of the American home buying market. And everything, you know, that's whenever we're talking about mortgages, I know there are adjustable rate mortgages and other things, but that's really what we're talking about. That's priced off of 10-year treasuries. So it's, you know, within the jargon term, there's a spread over 10-year treasuries, a percentage and a half, 2 percentage points over treasury. But you use that treasury, that riskless security, to price what is, you know, not a riskless security, but, you know, a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. Yeah, I mean, I know we've gone through a hard time in the housing market, but still, you know, most people still try and meet that mortgage payment. So you default on the debt. All of a sudden, people realize, hey, you know, This security is not as riskless as I thought. You have some selling. Interest rates go up. Your mortgage rate, by definition, is going to go up. And the same thing for corporations, because, again, most corporate debt, quality corporate debt, is priced off of treasuries. And so if interest rates in the treasury market abruptly go up, so is going to happen in the corporate market. So you can easily come up with a scenario where it starts spilling over throughout the economy. And then the big question will be, and we'll be on the phone, I guarantee you, the big question is going to be, well, then where do I put my safe money? My safe money was in treasury bills. My safe money was in U.S. treasuries. That's now no longer safe. Where do I put it? And so it's going to start that whole conversation, which will add to the spillover effect as it works its way through the markets.
So that's how it affects us on a day-to-day basis. President Obama also mentioned CEOs, corporate leaders, really worried about what's going to happen come October 17th.
Right.
What do they have in mind here?
Well, what they have in mind here is, you know, part of it is what's going on. What is going on? And I think that a number of CEOs, I mean, I think they've kind of put a hold on some projects just as they kind of get through this period of time. But the big fear, and what no one really knows, is, you know, do you remember back 5 years, in fact, we just went over the anniversary, in September 15th was the anniversary of the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers. And the global economy froze up. And that's what really makes people afraid. They don't know if that's going to happen. But that's the fear, that this is a much bigger deal than Lehman Brothers going bankrupt. The U.S. Treasury, the full faith and credit of the federal government, the riskless security in the global economy. And one way of thinking about it is the United States was the epicenter of the global financial crisis back in 2008, and yet savings from around the world poured into U.S. Treasuries for safety. So now you remove that. What is the implication? No one wants to find out. You can spin a story of catastrophe. You can spin a story that, no, it's not quite a short-run catastrophe. Maybe it's a longer-term erosion, a lack of faith. But no one really wants to find out. And what the people on Wall Street and what big business basically believes is because it's you don't want to find out, it's not going to happen. It doesn't make sense. It's irrational. And that's part of the problem that we're having right now.
Talking to Chris Farrell with Marketplace Money about the debt ceiling debate. And we want to hear from you. In a few minutes, we're going to let you sound off on this issue. Who do you blame, if anyone? Are you frustrated with both parties? Are you worried? Are you freaked out about the consequences of what's going to happen in a week or so? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email talk@WPR.org. Chris, President Obama also mentioned that this could end up costing us money. It'll make it more expensive for the United States to borrow money, ultimately could raise the deficit, he was arguing.
Yeah, and here the argument is it's just by race that we're just going to have to pay more. The government would have to pay more to borrow because, again, we're no longer the riskless security. And so that has implications of what the interest rate will be. It'll go up a little bit. There's been some economic studies that looked at the near default in 2011. And, you know, there was a little bit of an implication that lingered in terms of some slightly higher interest rates at that particular point in time that you really didn't want. So, again, this is there's nothing good that can be said about this. There's nothing good to be said about it for as a country. There's nothing good to be said as an investor. There's nothing good that can be said as a consumer. But there's also a great deal of uncertainty because in the post-World War II era, the U.S. Securities, the Treasury, has kind of been the benchmark for safety for the global economy. And once that changes, we kind of we've entered into a new world, a different world, and you know, sometimes it's kind of fun to enter a different world. This isn't one that you want to enter into.
Well, and I want to take it there. You've mentioned, in effect, that the whole world is watching what happens here.
Absolutely.
In the long run, are policymakers in other countries, investors in other countries saying, it's been a good run with the United States. We need to start thinking of a different international economic mechanism?
That conversation has been going on for about the, you know, it flares up and down, but I would say over the past 10 years, and there was a long conversation about that the euro would provide that alternative. Well,
whoops.
That was exactly right. Oops is right. And then there's some talk about the Chinese currency might be the currency of the future. They have so far to go that that's not going to happen. I mean, in the end, you know, the United States has global responsibilities. And we also get global benefits from being just the economic superpower that we are. So why would you squander that? It makes no sense. And I think that's where business and finance, that community is sort of looking at what's going on and saying, look, yeah, hey, there's a good fight about, you know, how you taxes and tax reform and immigration reform, but you're not dealing with any of this stuff. And why are you even talking about this? Because nobody benefits if there's a default. Shutdown and default are two different things. Mm-hmm. Default is really bad.
Chris, as always, thanks a lot for helping us out.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
That was Chris Farrell, economics editor for Marketplace Money. Well, now it's your turn. We're going to go to the phones and you can sound off on what you think about the politics of this debt ceiling debate, the blame game that's going on, and you can play that game too if you want. You can join in 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. If you catch a busy signal, you can keep dialing or email talk@WPR.org. We'll go to Rick now in Grafton. Rick, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, so maybe I'm a little too simple-minded, but you know, for my household, I can't raise the debt ceiling if my kids want to go to college, if I want to do house repairs, et cetera. I've got this budget, and I have to live by that. Personally, I don't think we should raise it, the debt limit, and we need to get our house in order and come what may. That's my opinion.
All right. Thanks a lot for starting us off, Rick. Appreciate it. Now we have Roger with us in Green Bay. Roger, hi. You're on the air.
Hello, sir. And Rick and Grafton just stole my thunder.
Uh-oh.
I am not the least bit worried about the so-called default. I believe that absolutely 1,000% we need to stop spending more than we're bringing in tax dollars. We need to stop borrowing. And in conclusion, I will say this, and we can compare it to a household. You can compare it to a multinational corporation. If either one were being operated with these same sorts of false justifications for more and more borrowing, the management would be ridiculed. We need to stop now. So, no, I'm not worried about the default. And as far as blaming anybody, there's nobody to blame. We need to. So, anyway, that's my thought.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Roger. We'll go now to JB in Wisconsin Dells. JB, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you? Thank you. I just wanted to kind of reiterate the last person's comment there towards the end in that be it the corporations in the economy or the government itself, it's just composed of people. We are the people, so it's kind of up to every individual to make the change from within. And also pointing blame left or right, whatever party, as far as I'm concerned, that's no different than saying black, white, and yellow. It's just a divide and conquer, take the attention away from the real issue, which is at hand. So that's my comments. Thank you.
JB, thanks a lot for calling. Well, our guest was worried about the debt ceiling. Our caller's not quite as worried for the most part. Let's see what Todd in Green Bay thinks. Todd, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. One of the things that I think the Obama White House has always lived by, as long as Rahm Emanuel was there, was that never let a crisis go to waste. And they have used this concurrent resolution and their refusal, really, to pass a budget for the last 5 years. It's been since 2009. All of this could have been avoided if Obama would have put forth a reasonable budget and if the Senate would have even allowed it to come up for a vote. But we wind up in the same situation every year because they want this issue to explode, and then they want to blame Republicans and hope that everybody forgets about what they've done in the past. And I think that we're going to wind up in a situation where we're going to have to look at spending at some point in time because we have so much duplication in government right now that it's ridiculous the amount of money we spend.
Gotcha.
And Obama just, you know, throwing $1 trillion more at the debt ceiling is not going to help.
Thanks for the call, Todd. We've got John with us now in Wauwatosa. Hi there, John.
Hi. My comment is that if we try and take a household budget or even a multinational corporate budget and think that that's representative, running that kind of a budget is representative of running a global economy, that doesn't make any sense. I think it's what we run into when we take these narrow and smaller, I should say, when I say narrow, I don't mean it in a derogatory way, but I do mean that there's not an understanding of the implications of decisions that are made by the United States and how they spread across the world.
Thanks a lot for the call, John. That's thank you so much, all of you, for your calls. Thanks to Chris Farrell for joining us for some debt ceiling talk.
And we'll talk more about the politics of the debt ceiling tomorrow with a guest from the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. That's coming up tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock.
Next is the news, then a guest who says the next food revolution will be getting rid of food waste. This is Central Time on the Ideas Net.